Welcome to TA1, everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and people that are interesting to me, hopefully to you too. So if you know me, follow along, you know, last month I spent had a couple of trips to the East Coast with Jasper Dringler as he was finishing up racing in all 50 states. We did South Carolina, Maryland, no, Delaware, and then we had to go back from Maryland. I don't know. Anyway, we got the last four done. I put together a pretty good little film, I think. Jasper likes it, and we'll put a link in the show notes. You can go see that if you want to find out more. But so we did an interview. And West Virginia got rained out on Saturday night. We found another race on Sunday to finish up the thing, so we had some time. So I sat down part of it for the video, and then this longer cut we'll put out here on the old podcast, which gets into a lot more things than just the 50 states, so I think you'll find it interesting. I did, and it was fun. So, yeah, let's hear what Jasper has to say. So, those adventure racers of you out there, I'm on my way to Tennessee in, 8 days? Not this weekend, but next weekend for the Chattanooga Epic. And, yeah, then we got a whole bunch of races coming up. Let's see, we're going to go Pennsylvania. We'll go to Maine. And actually Colorado. Finally, a race west of the Mississippi. Yeah. Okay, go fast. Take chances. Be careful. Hit your marks. And be safe. Thanks. Bye.
All right. First of all, who are you?
I'm Jasper Dringler. I live in Wisconsin, and I've been racing cars all over since the age of, legally at the racetrack, since the age of 19.
Okay, statute of limitations is up, so what's the true story?
Well, I may have dabbled in some illegal racing as a child. I may have been escorted by a police officer to a station and told that I could either go to jail that night, or I could come to his house every day after school and he'd teach me about how to build a real race car.
So
that was an easy choice.
Yeah. Why do you think he gave you that choice?
Well, it's real simple. Kids, if you have your driver's license, you have a car, and it doesn't take any money or prep work. Race cars take knowledge of mechanical ability, they take preparation, they take the transportation. So he gave me the choice probably because I think he saw a little bit of me in him, and I'm friends to him to this day, but he had just girls. He didn't have a son, and I lived right down the road from him, and, you know, taking me to jail that night probably would have been the right thing to do, but it wouldn't have set the stage for future, you know, the whole paying it forward mentality. And I think he just wanted to fix someone from making a grave mistake of either getting hurt or in big trouble or hurting someone else, even more realistic.
But hindsight being 24, you probably, if you went to jail, you'd be a millionaire by now.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, there is a correlation between the amount of racing I do and how successful my businesses have become. The less racing I do, the more money I make, and less I spend. But that's just part of it. It's an expensive sport.
So I ain't going to ask you how many businesses you have, but what is it that you basically do?
So I get asked that all the time, and I don't have much of a straight answer, but the gist of it is I own a company that is, I call a full-service chimney company, and I tell people I build custom fireplaces. We do everything from maintenance to relining. I've got a large number of employees, and we're kind of the best at what we do in our industry.
So you actually work all around the country.
If I will travel, just like the racing, if you've got a chimney anywhere in the country, we're going to go there. I've worked on chimneys as far away as Sweden and Italy, and then all over the United States.
So how do you get to be the chimney guy, the go-to guy?
Well, it's a niche environment. So my parents actually owned a chimney sweeping company when I was a child. And chimneys are stupid. No one wants to work on chimneys for a living. So I fell into it. My oldest son was born when I was real young and I needed money. And I wasn't making money doing oil changes. So I went to work for my parents. That company got sold. I went to work in a factory working on yachts for 6 months. That didn't work out. It turns out I'm unemployable. So I had to figure out a way to make money, and I had a little bit of skill in the chimneys, and I really didn't know what I was doing, but I could sell, and I could talk to people. So, business was okay. I survived. I'd say I was in survival mode for about 5-6 years. And then I started taking business serious, and it blew up.
So were you racing then, or?
I raced the entire time. There was a post on a Champ Car page about money and racing, and there was times in the early 2000s I was racing 4 or 5 nights a week, and back then I actually made money racing. It cost $20 to get into the track, and I left with $100 every night. So it wasn't making real money, but I was addicted, and it was extra money for the week.
So what were the first race cars?
The first race cars, I had a 1989 Beretta GT, and I used that in what was called Spectator Eliminators at Slinger Speedway. Won a couple races there. And then every year at Slinger, they'd have their races all summer long, and the last weekend was called the Spectator 200. And that's where fans were supposed to build jalopy V8s and crappy little four-cylinder cars and go out and race for 200 laps. And I thought I could do this. I got the rules. I borrowed a trailer. I borrowed a truck. I built a car that I would not let my children drive today if they had built it and wanted to race. But we drove it down to Slinger, and we entered the 200 or the Spectator 200 in this little Plymouth Acclaim, automatic, big, heavy car. And I never made a pit stop. And I finished in 5th place. The engine and the transmission were both toast at the end of the race. And Rex Melius, whose father was a local legend in Wisconsin, came up to me and goes, "Hey, if you build another one of these cars, we're going to start racing them every week down in Beaver Dam." And that got my attention. I could race every week instead of just once a year. And so I built a car just for Rex Melius's Dirt Devil Division, is what they called him. And I drove, I made the Toro trek down to Beaver Dam from Shawano to race every Saturday night. And the promoter at that track, Rex and his business partners, started racing in Oshkosh on Tuesday nights. So now I got to race the same car twice a week. And the following year, in 2003, I believe, all of a sudden, every little dirt track had a four-cylinder class. And so that's when I was able to race, not just Slinger, but Lake Geneva and Luxembourg and every small town track across the state was racing these little four-cylinder cars. So after the Plymouth Acclaim, I built a Dodge Shadow. I bought the car for $200. I think I had less than $1,000 in it to make it race ready. And I managed to win a few races that first year, which is probably the worst thing ever.
That's always,
So now you win a few races, and now you're stuck. Now you're hooked.
Yeah.
So the Dodge Shadow was dented up from being dragged all over the country, so I sold that, and I started building Chevy Cavaliers. And those first couple of years, I was the only Cavalier out and about. Everyone was driving old Omnis and old Dodge Daytonas and just whatever they could find that ran that was rust bucket. But these cars I was running weren't rust buckets. And so they were more reliable, and I won a lot of races.
I got this. Is that sometimes? I'll change cards. Sometimes it says it won't record. No, I know it'll do. Yeah. The card can't keep up with the recording. Okay, so was it The four-cylinder Renaissance, was that just because they were cheap?
They were cheap. Yeah. And so I found a buddy.
They were cheap to do, maybe.
They were cheap to do. So I found a guy that would actually go to the auctions and drag cars home for me. And he was spending like $250 for a rust-free Cavalier that had been in a small fender bender. And he charged me $400, $500 for these cars. So he was making some quick money. I was happy. But nobody else at the tracks were. And then once people figured out these cars were superior to what they were running, now they're everywhere. Yeah. You know, you go to any track that has a front-wheel drive four-cylinder class, and the field's full of Cavaliers. So I did that for a few years. 2005, I bought a street stock off a buddy of mine, and won a bunch of races, won some Rookie of the Year titles, raced that car for a couple of years. And then I kind of got bored with the every single Saturday night and the 10 times a week racing, and it was just getting to be a little bit too much. So I started to go endurance racing, and I started off in a series called the Midwest Enduro Series, and they had four cylinders, V6s and V8s, and they each had their own race, and we won a lot of those. I had some employees at the time, and I let them drive some cars, so I won some championships as an owner and a driver, and that was fun. And then I started seeing, at that point I started traveling. So the Midwest Enduro Series was in Wisconsin and Illinois. So I got to tracks like Rockford and Grundy and Joliet, and that looked like fun. But I always wanted to race at Road America. And, you know, I'd raced at a lot of tracks across Wisconsin, but Road America was kind of this gem that I just had to try one day. So we had read about the Lemon Series, and then we had read about the Champ Car, or Chump Car it was back then. And I said, we can do this. So I built a couple Mustangs, and we went Chump Car racing. And so the first couple of years, we went to Brainerd, and we went to Louisiana, we raced Road America. And again, the same thing, the very first Chump Car race, we finished fifth at Road America. Tickled pink, it's a huge field of cars. And that was the problem. Slight taste of success and had to do more. Yeah. So from there, I thought it'd be a great idea to rent out one car to pay for the other one, which that idea actually didn't work, shockingly. But right around then, business was starting to get good. So I was renting seats in other people's cars, and I started to get the itch to race at the local track again. So I built another four-cylinder, an Acura Integra, and I won 10 of 14 races at the local track that summer. Didn't win the championship. Lost it on the last corner, the last lap, or the last race of the season. And then I went dirt late model racing for a few years, and that was a massive money pit, and I had no idea what I was doing. You know, the four-cylinder cars are simple. They're easy. You can build them overnight. The late model was like having another full-time job. You know, it's 40 hours a week to get the car ready to race, and then race for 20 laps and you're done. So I'd already raced Road America, and at this point I decided I want to try just racing new tracks. And I came across an ad for a gentleman looking to rent out a B-Spec car. For then it was Rally World Challenge, and they rented out TCB cars. I called him up and we worked out a deal, and I think it was Laguna Seca I wanted to race. I wanted to go race the Corkscrew. And we hashed out a deal, one race, and it was a ton of money, I was putting all my eggs in smaller baskets because I wanted to do some higher level racing. And the deal was I could race the car at Laguna that year as long as he didn't find a renter to take the car up for the whole season. And sure enough, a couple weeks later, he called me up. Hey, I got a renter for the whole season. Sorry. Good luck. So I'm cruising around online, and I find Glenn Nixon's TCB car for sale up in Canada. So I called Glenn, wired him some money, went and picked it up. That's a whole other story about the trouble it was importing a car when you don't know what you're doing. But then I went probably World Challenge racing for a year, and that's when I really learned I couldn't drive. I really was not good. I was a big fish in a little pond running around Wisconsin, but in World Challenge, I was out of my element. So I went to Bondurant and I got some coaching and I got a little bit better. Still not the best road racer in the world, but I enjoy it. It's fun. And the second year of running TCB in World Challenge, we were told that this is the last year for TCB. And that's when I heard that the SCCA was going to race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And now that's a bucket list track. You know, I went to 17 Indianapolis 500s before I was 18 years old. So, you know, I grew up at that track, and I never would have ever dreamed I'd race there. So that was my first foray into SCCA racing. And of course, I had no idea the politics or the tech or how it worked. So I just started showing up to tracks, and I got a quick lesson really fast about everything I didn't know how to do. And, we got to race at Indy that year. I qualified for the runoffs, finished sixth at the runoffs, super happy. You know, I've got the iconic picture of the car driving through Gasoline Alley and crossing the bricks and all the photos that you could only dream of having. So I was happy, sold that car, and my plan was to go TCA racing in World Challenge. And I bought a car and built it myself and got the car just about ready. And the money just didn't make sense. The amount of money it takes to drive that car for a season in TCA compared to other racing opportunities I could do, it just didn't make much sense. So I was still renting seats. I rented seats with Cranky Acres and a number of other teams in both WRL, World Racing League, Champ Car Now, and so I decided to tour the country with the SCCA. I kind of fell in love with the culture and the people. Once I figured out how to actually exist in
politics.
Once I figured out, you know, how tech worked and the hierarchy of the system, and you just have to say yes sir, no sir to the right people. So for 2 years, I just went SCCA racing. Well, I developed this car, and I think it was 2021, I did the entire Super Tour. Believe I'm the only driver that took to the track in every single event for the entire year across the country, so that was pretty cool. And then in the meantime, I met a gentleman, and we decided we were going to go road racing with a team. So we started that, and we got to meet a lot of people and go to a lot more tracks. And then those 3-4 years of road racing, whenever I had an off week, I'd hook up the trailer and throw a little four-cylinder car on and just go find a track in a new state I hadn't raced in before. So, just checking them off as we go.
Yeah. So, let's go back a little bit. So, anybody that knows circle track racing knows Slinger. Why is that such an iconic track that a lot of people haven't heard of, but a lot of people have?
Yeah, in the racing world, you go to any NASCAR garage, everyone knows of Slinger. It's very high banked. It's a quarter mile. They used to say it's the world's fastest enclosed quarter mile. The super late models are in the low 10 seconds. They might have cracked 9 seconds at some point, but they are flying. And, you know, that's hitting the brakes twice and turning 4 times. It's not in a straight line. It's really fast. So Slinger, when I was a kid, was only like 30 minutes from my house. And my dad back in the day would sponsor a lot of drivers. So he sponsored Lowell Bennett, who still raced today, and Doug Herbst, and Rich Locke, and Andy Wendt. And we'd go to the track every single Sunday night. So I grew up sitting on the exit of turn 4 watching the Slinger and cheering, and those are my heroes.
Yeah.
And when it was called the Miller Genuine Draft Nationals came to town, that's when Rusty Wallace would show up. You know, that's when Rich Bickle would show up. That's when all these, the Sauders, you know, guys that are around, Robbie Reiser, Matt Kenseth would come back. So to race against those guys was quite amazing. And at the time, we were sponsoring, in the late 90s and early 2000s, we were sponsoring Lowell Bennett, and he won some of those races. Mm-hmm. I think he's got 6 or 7 nationals championships. And it was incredible. So Slinger was the big draw, and because we were going there, I started there doing the Spectre Limited racing there. They had a Speedway guest cars where you could show up and rent this old Crown Vic and do some laps, and they were beat up and nasty. And I tried that once, but it didn't handle for anything. It was driving an old boat. So when the four cylinder started racing there in 2002. I was there for the very first race, and I won the very first Slinger B race.
Yeah.
So So every once in a while, my name will pop up in a history archive with Slinger Speedway, and I just love that track.
Yeah. Wisconsin, if you're, I guess, a casual fan, and you think big time NASCAR or big time racing is like North Carolina, South Carolina, but there are a lot of really good drivers that came out of Wisconsin. Is it just the amount of competition that there's always been there, or?
So it's a couple things. It's not just the level of the competition, which there is, but it's the number of, it's the sheer quantity of tracks. Yeah. Like I said, I was in Wisconsin at one point in the early 2000s, I could race five nights a week, you know? So if you have a car and you want to get laps in, because there's no replacement for seat time. Mm-hmm. And if you're living in the South and you're just racing on Saturday nights or Friday nights, that's once a week.
Yeah.
If you have an asphalt car, you could race three nights a week. And if you have a dirt car, you can be out there four or five nights a week still to this day. We got tracks to race on Tuesdays. I think the only night I couldn't find a track was some Wednesday nights. And Mondays were rare. But, yeah, there were plenty of nights in the summer, I think, like holiday weekends, Memorial weekend, Labor Day weekend, 4th of July weekend, race seven nights a week. So.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'm stealing this question because I don't know if I'm Dinner for Racers or who it is, but who's the one guy in Wisconsin that should have made it and just didn't quite get that break?
That's tough. So my opinion of pro racing is a little jaded. I saw a lot of guys that could afford to write checks that can't drive. And we still see that to this day. But I know of guys that if they were just given a checkbook, they would crush some guys that are pro drivers. Yeah. So I would argue, even when we go to our local Champ Car races, there are drivers in that field that could kick butt.
Yeah.
You know, like when NASCAR goes to Dakota, there's guys in Champ Car cars that could go out there and win. And we saw that, you know, Taylor hopped in a car. Now he's obviously a pro IMSA car driver, but... some of the best drivers in the country aren't on TV every weekend.
Yeah.
And that's throughout the country.
Yeah. Best driver ever from Wisconsin?
Best driver ever. You know, my childhood idol was Alan Kowicki. Yeah. So that's going to be my answer for most of the time. Yeah. There's a lot. There's a lot of good Wisconsin drivers. But Alan Kowicki was my childhood hero, and I think... watching his biography and his movie, and you know, I attended his funeral service when I was a kid, and he was my pen pal. You know, I'd write letters to him, and he'd write letters back every single time. He always replied. But you know, for him to be stubborn and just doing things his own way kind of rings true to me a little bit. That spoke to my personality. You know, I love it when people tell me I can't do anything, and I'll go and I'll find a way to do it. So not just his ability to drive, but his ability to actually get his hands dirty and work on the car.
Yeah.
And his ability to just, you know, tell the haters to be quiet and go out and do whatever he's told he can't.
Does the hands-on thing, how important is that? I mean, or would you'd be fine going to a team where the engineer sets up everything?
So I've done that. I've shown up to the track and just been the guy that's writing a check and racing. When I was running for a Porsche team out of Colorado, that's all I did. I wasn't supposed to touch the car. For me,
you will not touch the car.
I will not touch the car. For me, I enjoy it to a point. Like you've seen me at the track, just completely dog tired and frustrated. And I don't know how many times I've said I hate cars in the last couple of years.
Race cars suck.
Yeah, they're the devil. But. For me, as a driver, I feel a lot more confident when I know what is on the car.
Yeah.
And when I hear a sound and I'm in my head diagnosing, okay, what is that? Okay, I think it's that bolt, or I think it's this part. I'm going to keep driving, or crap, I know that sound. We're pulling off now.
Yeah.
So for me, I enjoy that part of it. I don't do all of my own wrenching. Yeah. I use some shops to do some of my things. Right now, one of my cars is at a tranny shop because... I don't have the time, and I'm not the transmission expert, so I'm not going to mess it up. But I like doing the basic maintenance, and I don't mind tinkering on the cars. But I think I get a different level of confidence when I know what it is I'm driving.
Yeah. So are you... how are you on like setup, suspension, shocks? I mean, do you know what to do? Can you do it?
Yeah, and it depends on the car. Yeah. So like on my Dirt Late model, I had no clue what I was doing. There's so many adjustments and bars. Road racing is a lot more forgiving on setups because you run pretty much the same camber caster toe, pretty much the same weight. The cars are, for the most part, balanced unless you're at like Lime Rock Park where you're just turning right the whole time. So that's pretty easy. Those cars you can set up in the shop and you make slight air pressure adjustments, slight spring adjustments, nothing major. Asphalt cars are horrible as far as setup. The temperature drops 5 degrees, the car goes to heck. You know, the tires are so precise, you know, half pound here, 2 pounds there. Can you run a bleeder valve? You know, dirt cars are overall a lot more forgiving. There's a basic setup that's going to work. You'll move jacks around a little bit. But the four-cylinder front-wheel drive cars, you can unload off the trailer and be competitive just about anywhere. And if they're, you just have to search for grip. Like last night, first laps on the track, no clue where I was going, and I was not in the groove. And as soon as someone passed me, I'm like, oh, we're going to move down there.
Yeah.
It was a piece of cake. So knowing tracks and having experience and seat time is key. But when it comes to setting them up, I know just enough. I know how I like a car to be a little loose. I drive a little loose car over a little tight car any day. Setting up the road course cars is a piece of cake because I'm only running two-way or three-way adjustables. I'm not running remote reservoirs and all of that stuff.
The pendulum shocks.
Those are pretty sweet. We heard about those today. And I don't have any. I don't run $20,000 struts or shocks on my cars. So
you got a dirt car that's set up okay. You got an asphalt car, or let's say a sports car. The asphalt car and a sports car. They're all set up okay. Which is the easiest to drive fast then? I guess which do you have the most say as a driver in how it's going to work?
So the worst to drive, so if you have all three, the worst is going to be the oval asphalt. If the setup's off, the setup's off. The driver can overcome some, you know, try to let it into the corner easier, get it to rotate, but you're going to destroy tires. That's going to be the worst. With the dirt car, you can search around. Yeah. You can back up your corner. You can throw it in harder. You can rotate the car early. Yeah. Road course racing isn't too bad. You have to, I've learned, that was one of the biggest things that I learned from some coaching is slow down and think the whole corner through. Don't just go for the shortest route and, you know, moving your apex around. Rolling into the corners, the trail breaking, you can overcome a little bit, but if you're going to have a car that's just okay and not perfectly set up, I'd take the dirt oval car.
Yeah, the most.
You could have moved the most around as a driver.
Yeah. Are you good at taking coaching?
No. I'm not good at taking directions, period. The coaching was a struggle, and you know, a good coach is going to call you out on your crap and tell you what you're doing wrong, and it's hard to listen to. That first year in World Challenge was a hard pill to swallow. Like I did okay in a lot of racing, and now I remember one time I was at COTA, and the announcers didn't even know who I was on track, and so I was getting lapped by some cars in another class, and that driver. I got called that driver and because no one knew who I was. I was in the way. I was a back marker. But I remember sitting at Bondurant in the first 2 days. I got back to where I was staying, and I just felt like, this isn't for me. Like, race car driving and I are just going to be a hobby, and I'm not good at it.
Yeah.
But I didn't give up. You know, I'm stubborn. So the last day of class, everything just started clicking. You know, the instructors have a reason why they're telling you something. They have a reason why they want you to learn a skill or work on something. And the last day, I beat my instructor in lap times. Yeah. So, and it wasn't just one fluke. I think the whole second half of the day, he couldn't touch me.
Yeah.
And I was really proud of that. So that was fun.
Good instructor. How nerve-wracking is it when you're on a track with cars that can be much faster than you are? Not because you're slow, because they're
different classes. So that was actually a really interesting lesson to learn in World Challenge. So here I'm a rookie in the 115 horsepower Honda Fit, and I'm out there with cars with 300 horse, and they're flying past you. But it was great because ever since then, my road racing has gotten way better because I'm always checking the mirror. And I'm not afraid to give a point by. If you're faster than me, it is absolutely true. I want to let you go past me when it's convenient for me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you that point. Otherwise, if you don't take it, you're going to get hurt in the corner because I'm not giving it up completely.
Yeah.
So I'm really good at driving with my mirrors. Not necessarily defensively, but just so I don't wreck myself.
Yeah.
Which is where a lot of these accidents happen. You know, at Daytona this year, when we were down there for the race. Mm-hmm. And at Sebring, they did it again. It's like the race is almost over. You guys couldn't look in a mirror, or you take a move that you shouldn't. And so I'm okay with driving around with cars that are way faster than me. Yeah. It's much more fun to be the fast car on track.
Yeah,
I really love that a little bit more, but it's a challenge. It's fun.
Yeah.
So how did the 50 states come? Was that a conscious decision, or did you wake up one morning and said, I've done like 18 states.
It started out unconscious. It started out, I just wanted to run certain series. So I did the World Challenge, and then I started looking, and I kept a map. I've always kept this map. I put a pin in all the tracks I've been to, and we're in the 140s, I think, for tracks total. But after the World Challenge, that's when it became a conscious decision to search out completely new states and check them off.
So how do you trailer your car to Hawaii?
So Hawaii was fun. So it turns out when you're calling around car owners in Hawaii and you tell them you want to rent a car and you're from the States and you're trying to race all 50 states, they're not real excited about that. So the track promoter was really helpful. He told me he found a car and I wired him the money instantly. Yeah. Like I knew he was the promoter. And people never know how serious you really are about something until all of a sudden you're sending them money.
Yeah.
So I paid for the car in full, sight unseen, and I was showed pictures. And the car, it was a Volkswagen, and it didn't look too bad. It looked like your standard race car, but, you know, pictures are always fun. So when I get to the island, they had arranged a guy to haul it around in a U-Haul and on a car dolly for me, so I just had to get to the island,
yeah,
which was amazing. And I get there and the car doesn't look anything like the pictures. It's got a lot more dents on it. The roll cage was sketchy at best. But of course, being that the promoter got it for me, they're going to let me drive it. You know, there was no tech. Oh, you know, you have a helmet, you're good. So I race the car and then I find out that car doesn't have the best history. You know, it was like a back marker and someone just found it.
Yeah.
And I think I finished third that night in the feature, and we took the car back to the car to the promoter's house, left it there, and 2 weeks later he's like, hey, I found a buyer for the car, and he sent me the check, and I believe the check was more than I had paid for it, so that was a good trip.
Good. So same story in Alaska?
Alaska went a lot smoother. So Alaska, I met this guy online named Ryan. He has Warhawk Racing, and we chit-chatted back and forth, and I guess he called the promoter in Hawaii to say, hey, is this guy real? Like, he was at your track. Is he the real deal? And I must have left a good impression of the promoter because he told Ryan, oh, yeah, good guy. So I asked Ryan. We worked out a deal. Again, sent him the money immediately. Flew to Alaska, rented an RV to tool around and sleep at the track. And I got there, and, you know, the motor wasn't quite making the right power, and it was leaking water, and I went out there. It was a 2-day event, which was perfect because my thought was if it rains out, I don't have to make a second trip to Alaska. So we picked a 2-day weekend so that hopefully one of the 2 days won't rain out. And I got on track and the car was a little loose. I mean, it was a big, it was like a Ford LTD or a Ford Crown Vic. It was a big bomber style class car. And the drivers were friendly and they were happy and I didn't wreck any of them too bad. I think there was one driver I didn't really give him any room, and he decided to test the wall a little bit, but I didn't put him there. But the second day, after we survived the first day, I let the car eat. I gave it everything I could, and there's a really cool photo montage of me going to turn one, and I'm in third place, and I'm splitting the first and second place driver on the asphalt, and the car is sweeping sideways, completely sideways, coming around the corner as I passed them both. The car didn't survive the whole race. It didn't like the abuse I was giving it. But I got to bring home a trophy from the first day and, you know, say I raced in Alaska. And again, that car sold really fast after I left. You know, it was a back marker and I just abused the snot out of it, and someone else, and it's still racing today.
So what qualifies as an official I raced in this state?
So the only state that I'm not super proud of is Rhode Island, and that's because we went go-kart racing. So
Is there anything else though?
there's not a permanent racetrack in Rhode Island. So when we were going to find a place to race in Rhode Island, I looked for an autocross, I looked for, you know, a rally, and we settled on the go-kart track. So if anyone has a problem with that, we can organize a race in Rhode Island. I'll definitely go back. I know Kenny Schrader hasn't raced there yet, so I'm gonna beat him to the 50. But otherwise, they've all been. Oh, South Carolina, we went drag strip racing, and racing's racing, but we went to the drag strip. Otherwise, it's been a road course, and it's been a full-size car in every state.
You get a green flag.
Get a green flag, and I've got a lot of checkered flags along the way too.
But
There've been a couple DNFs, but it happens.
It's racing.
Yep.
Everybody does that. What percentage of drivers have been like, "Oh, this is really cool," versus "What are you doing at my track?"
I get there's a huge spectrum on that. So this weekend, of course, we're just towing a pickup truck and a little enclosed trailer, which is still a nice trailer. But there were a couple tracks when we had the semi, when we were doing the road racing, and we pulled in with the semi, and people are like, "Who are you? Where are you from, and why are you here?" And sometimes people are like, "Oh, this is really cool, you know, nice to meet you and everything." And there's other times they just hate you before you even open the trailer. I've showed up at tracks where they've let me race for free. Like, "We're just excited to have you here." They roll out the red carpet. They pay me at the end of the night. I had a track where after I got home, the tech inspector called me. He goes, "I just want to let you know that the promoter ripped you off. He only gave you half your prize money." And first off, I didn't know. Second off, I didn't care. But it's just it's weird. There are some people that are just not appreciative of you pulling in. And it might have been because we were rolling around in a big rig towing three cars, and that was fine. But like when we went to New Mexico, I wanted to drive as fast as I could to get there and back. I only had 3 days, and we weren't going to take the semi because it's governed at 76. So we took a flatbed trailer and my pickup truck and my daughter, and I drove nonstop to New Mexico, raced. I raced her car. I didn't even drive one of mine. I raced my daughter's car, which is one of the slower cars we have, and finished third, I think. Loaded up, drove home, and the whole track was super friendly and happy to see you. And they see Wisconsin plates in New Mexico. What are you doing here? So sometimes I think it was jealousy of the equipment we were bringing to the track. Other times, guys just didn't want us to take away their points or their pay. And there have been plenty of times when the tech officials are talking to me, I'm like, I don't care about your points. I don't care about the prize money. But if I win the trophy, it's coming home with me." And so I forfeit a lot of prize money at certain tracks. There's times I've shown up and I was the back marker. I was in the way. And there were a couple races where I see the leaders are coming to lap me, and I'm pulling off. I'm not going to screw up the local points race. I don't want to leave. I don't want people to hate me for showing up. But there have been times I've showed up and lapped the field, you know. So it just depends. And sometimes guys are happy to. There was a gentleman I beat once, and he walked in. He goes, "You're the first person to beat me all year." And he was happy, you know,
Yeah,
about that.
little competition.
Competition, you know. And like last night, I mean, I almost got beat by a 12-year-old girl, you know. She passed me and I passed her back right before the checkered, but I walked up to her and I thanked her for the race, you know. Like, I enjoy the sport. I like to win, don't get me wrong. I want to win everything, but I enjoy the competition. I don't enjoy mechanical failures, but
And I'm going to say last night on that track, I think you two might have had the only two passes of the whole night.
yeah, it was a one lane track, and obviously I sat there all night watching the races, and I probably should have known better, but as a driver, knowing roughly the competition that I had, I didn't want to pinch someone off into a wall. And I was very confident my car was going to stick coming off the bottoms of the corners, and I was going to wash up high. So if I stay up there, I'm not going to hit anyone, and I'm out here for fun, so I didn't care. But when she made that bonsai move and passed me on the inside, a 3 and 4, I'm like, okay, we're gonna race. And so I loved it. I had a smile on my face all night last night.
Yeah, it was a nice track.
Yeah,
never seen so many kids in the infield in my life.
Yeah, yeah, that's one cool thing about some of the small dirt tracks is you get there and there are little kids everywhere. They're being raised at the track, and they turn into big kids that are still the track. And as much as, you know, I'm a dad, and I might have brought kids into tracks when they were too young, but I love the sport. And you're not going to get that love of the sport by reading about it in magazines or watching YouTube videos, you know. So kids have to be at the racetrack. And I love it when promoters allow that. And when you're brought up around it, it's safe. You know, if you go to the track for the first time when you're 12, not being raised up, and you run out in front of a car, that's, you know, you should know better. But a lot of these kids, they know exactly what they're doing. They help work on the cars. And I love it. You know, I love it when my kids come to the track. And my youngest son loves getting dirty on the car. He doesn't always know what he's doing, but you point to nuts and bolts, and he'll go to town working on it.
What's the most surprising track you've been to, either in a good or a bad way?
Wow. The most surprising track. I went to Buttonwillow, California, not expecting much. So the videos of that track, it looks boring. And when you're studying tape, as I've learned that I should do for road courses, because you want to at least know if you're turning left or right. Studying the tape and watching videos of the track, I didn't expect much. And I actually left that track really liking it. It had some elevation that you can't tell on tape. And I enjoyed that track. I guess one of my biggest, for some reason, I don't enjoy VIR. You know, it's a bucket list track for so many people. And I got there, and there's some cool parts. The S's are fun, and there's history there, but I left there not as excited to have been there as I was.
Been there, done that?
Been there, done that. I've gone to some of the best racing has been on some of the crappiest venues. You know, tracks where there's horrible food, horrible plumbing, but the surface was great and the crowd was great and it just surprised you. And then I've been to tracks that are first-class facilities, but the people are just not as much fun. So you can't judge a track until you actually get to it and live it and experience it. There's a handful of tracks I'll never go back, like just won't. And my favorite track is the next one. I want to, you know, I'm most excited about the one I've never been to before. Road America, I call my home track now, and I will race there every year for as long as I can, just because it's there and I love that place. But it's fun. But my favorite track is gonna be the new one that I haven't been to before. The most emotional track was at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. During COVID, we weren't allowed to have any fans. We weren't allowed to bring anyone unless they were crew. So that was the most emotional race. I rented seats in two different cars for that race. The one car that I rented a seat in, paid top dollar for it because they are perennially towards the front end of the field. And then I rented a second seat, one because why not enjoy the experience of racing at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But day one, we didn't win. We had some issues with the car, got towed in at one point. Day two, I started out, and we had a brake caliper kind of act up right on the start. So we started behind the eight ball, and being the first driver out in a champ car race is a blast. That was with Crank Yanker's little BMW E30, and that car handles, and it drives exactly how you want it to. And I was passing multiple cars every single lap, just zipping through the field, and I loved it. And then I got out, and the next driver went in, and we were towards the front of the field. And I knew we were doing really good, but at the other car that I rented, I hopped in for my second stint, And, you know, every time I saw the E30 come up in the rearview mirror, I gave it all the room in the world, and I didn't really let anyone behind him pass him without a fight, you know. The other car I rented was it was another BMW. It was a big 5 Series V8 car, and it was like driving a Crown Victoria, with all the body lean and the roll, but it had all the power. And so I got done with my stint in that car, got out, and the E30 was like, I think we were in second place at the time. And the car owner of the other team comes up to me and says, "Our last driver doesn't want to drive. They don't want to get back in the car. They're not feeling well. You want to hop in?" I'm like, "Yeah, of course I do."
Yeah.
Right? So I'm driving around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in a fast but not well-handling BMW. And every 30 minutes or so, the other car that I rented is passing me, and I don't know what position they're in. There's no scoreboard, but I know we're doing really good. And that was quite emotional, because after being on the track for so many hours, everything slows down. So my lap times are still good, but you're getting used to the speed. And I remember just staring at the grandstands, like, this place is empty. We might win, and there's nobody here to see this. And I remember getting out of the car, pulling into the garage, nobody's there, the car's intact, and nobody's smiling. Nobody on our crew, none of my co-drivers have a smile on their face. And I'm like, what happened? You know, we finished second, we were out of gas, I had no idea. And like, nobody's talking. It was just the most bizarre thing. And then I find out that we had won, and they were emotional because there was a crew member that had passed away a couple weeks ago. It wasn't that they were quiet but
There's some emotion
there was a
there.
lot of emotion there. And it turns out the gentleman that passed away, I didn't know him, unfortunately, so I was the guy not knowing why we're not super happy. We just won at Indy. But he was actually supposed to co-drive in the other car as well. And it was a pretty emotional afternoon. And, you know, we took the kissing of the bricks photos and we all lined up. And that's probably the coolest win ever. The second coolest win was at a dinky little dirt track. It was the first time I shared the track with my son, and I think he finished third or fourth, and I won the race. But that was a pretty cool night, sharing the track with my kid and winning. So.
That's cool. I had a thought, but oh. Since we've had this nice little emotional story, which is really cool, what's the best track food you ever had?
Best track food. So I love the at Sebring, the breakfast burger, the Beast. That thing is massive, and I love it. Otherwise, I love the Gearbox at Road America. And you can't go to Road America and not eat something good at the Gearbox. But I would say the Beast at Sebring is probably one of my favorite meals. You know, people like the turkey legs at Indy or the turkey legs at Talladega, and that's just whatever. But the Beast breakfast sandwich has probably got to be my all-time favorite track food.
So, well, you raced at Martinsville, right? Did you have hot dogs?
I did not race at Martinsville.
Oh, I thought.
No,
Oh,
haven't been there. I
Bristol.
raced at Bristol.
Bristol.
Yeah, I raced at Bristol for the short track all-star race. My car wanted to kill me. Yeah, I had all the power in the world. I had one of the top five engine setups and tuning setups. The car just would not rotate on exit. I would get into the corner just fine, and then the car wanted to go straight to the wall and kill me. So that was miserable. But yeah, I ran, I think, the D main and the C main and made it to the B main. Didn't make it to the main show. I mean, they had hundreds of cars there. It was a blast.
Is that maybe like the biggest race you've car like in terms of car numbers or?
No, I've been to a number of endurance races with hundreds of cars and, you know, 300 lap races where you're bumper to bumper. But like, by the time the first row will start and take off, and the last row of cars haven't moved yet, and those are a blast. There's a series called the Impact Survival Series that'll put a few hundred cars on a tiny little quarter mile track, and it's a blast. Don't bring anything there that you don't want dented. I've crashed a few cars in that event. And then when the cars die, they leave them on the track. So if your car dies on the front stretch, they wait 2 laps, Then they throw a red flag. You get out of the car, and they leave your car sit. And the fans love it, and there's always carnage, and there's always destruction. And they have pit stops have to be done on the track. So they'll throw a red flag, shut all the engines down. Your crew comes onto the track, does your pit stops, where your car sits, and then they start the race again. So that series is a lot of fun. I'll do a few more of those before I quit racing, but I enjoy that stuff too.
You ever figure eight race?
I did a double figure eight race at the Outagamie County Fair. So instead of just a regular double figure eight, it's a double. So there's three big tractor tires, and you had to go around back and forth. That was ridiculous. That was fun.
What's the strategy? Go fast or be safe?
Survive.
Keep your eyes open.
So I've watched so many figure eight races because Slinger used to have them every night. I think they probably still do. But sometimes being cautious hurts you.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just a matter of you having peripheral vision and knowing where the next hit is going to come from. It's the surprise hits that hurt. When you know they're coming, you can avoid them a little bit better. And you don't have a big motor, so you can just hit the gas and get out of the way faster.
So we're doing this. Knock wood, the night before 50. So what's going to be, what's next then? Did he reach this goal?
I don't know. There's a number of tracks I want to race that are in the SCCA schedule that I have never been to before. I've done the entire Super Tour schedule. But after this, for the rest of this summer, I'm just going to, there's a couple Champ Car races I want to enter. There's a Lemons race I want to enter. I'll probably do some racing locally, just for the fun of it.
Stop. Keep going. All right, hang on. Are we running out? No, we got. I don't know what that was. Anyway, we'll keep going. So yeah, so Champ Car.
Yeah, we're gonna do some road racing yet this year. A few events. But there's a couple tracks left in Wisconsin that I raced at. Don't remember the numbers, but there's over 60 tracks in Wisconsin. There's a couple I haven't been to yet, so I want to get those done. There's a bunch of road courses I haven't been to yet, so I'm going to hit those. And then it depends on my kids. My daughter wants to do some more racing. My son wants to do some more racing. Yeah. So we'll throw cars and trailers, and we'll go pick a track, and we'll race just randomly. Kind of got a little burnt out the last couple of years. I was spending too much time focusing on the racing and not on business. So I got to put my nose down and get some work done. But I'm never going to stop racing.
Are you fine, like, looking at, like, all right, I'm going to take 2 years. I'm not going to do, I got to do work. Are you okay then thinking, like, well, okay, in, 27, I'm going to go. Yeah, I want to go race Long Beach.
Yeah, it's always a possibility.
Yeah,
I don't foresee myself chasing points. I very much enjoy going to a track. I want to win every track I pull into. I want to win, but stressing over the points and stressing over, when there's pressure on you, that's just not fun. So I've done that. I've won championships. I've lost championships. I've crisscross the country trying to gain points, and it was fun. I wouldn't take it back. I'm glad I did it, but I don't know that I want to chase a schedule again. I'm just gonna race for fun when I feel like it. If one of my biggest goals is to run the Baja 1000, I still want to do that. I've gone down there the last 3 years working for BF Goodrich Tire, but I want to be in the driver's seat. I want to race that race.
Have you ever had or come close to a perfect race?
A perfect race.
Whatever a perfect race is. Right?
I had all but a perfect season, except for the last night. So it would have been 2014. 14 races got ran on the schedule. I won 10 of them. The couple I didn't race, or I didn't finish, were weird mechanicals.
Yeah.
But the last race of the season, the guy that finished second almost the entire year won the points championship because coming out of the last corner, there were some guys from out of town that showed up and they passed me. And I wanted to win
Yeah.
last night, and I gave it its all, and I lost a tire over the berm. That night we had a heavy track and ripped the right front tire off the bead, sent me into the wall. All I had to do was cross the finish line,
Yeah.
and the championship was mine, and the car died in turn four. But that year, that was the only contact that car made with anything the whole year. I ran the entire season on a dirt track and never even touched another car. So that was pretty cool. And there was a night I got a flat tire, made a pit stop, went back out, still won the race. So that was a pretty amazing year. I got accused of all kinds of cheating. I just read the rule book and picked the right car for the rules.
Yeah.
So
there's always gray area-ish.
Yeah. Well, they could have picked a different car too.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. All right. So, what has been your favorite car to drive?
The spec Porsches are right there. I would actually say Tyler's E30 was probably the car is not going to win a beauty pageant.
Yeah.
I mean, he enjoys it just the way it is.
Yeah.
Everything on that car is function and not form. And it's never going to win a car show. It's not a beautiful car.
Yeah.
But they've cut away on the body just right. Big splitter, big wing, and the car stinks. It
yeah.
goes where you want it to consistently. Doesn't have any traction control. Doesn't have any ABS. It's a very pure driving experience. And the nice thing about driving that car is if someone were to come up to the corner and you touch sheet metal, it's no big deal. So I love driving the Porsches in WRL, but I put the car off track, I'm writing a check.
Yeah.
You know, I scratch this car, I'm writing a check. And, you know, I don't have an unlimited budget, so there's times when I was younger and I was driving cheaper cars, I didn't care.
Yeah.
But I can freely admit that there's times I didn't take chances. You know, I've crashed it a lot. I've rolled over. I've been on fire. So there's times I haven't taken chances because my maturity level is in self-survival mode and not everything to win all the time. But the Porsches, like I got to race at Texas World Speedway before they bulldozed it. That was an amazing experience. But I would say if I only had to drive one car tomorrow, I'd be calling up Tyler and I'd be getting in that Cranky Acres E30 and I'd go wherever he wanted to go.
Yeah. All right, so then the last question, but I'm going to give you my answer first because since I've been in the sporty car world for like, what, a year and a half with you guys, and this is stole from Corey LaJoy. It's one car, one track, the rest of your life.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to tell you mine then while you have time. It's the All Sport Mustang at Sebring. Beat that.
Yeah. The car that I want to get my hands on is a GT3. I would love to drive one of those. And, of course, if maintenance wasn't an
yeah.
issue and I didn't have to work on it. One track. You know, people always ask me what my favorite track is and what's the track I would go to.
Yeah.
And I absolutely hate Sebring, but I absolutely love Sebring.
Yeah.
So
you love Sebring when you're driving.
I love Sebring when I'm on the track enjoying it, but I've spent
not when it's 10 o'clock on Friday night.
Oh, that is.
And you got to send me to Walmart.
Yeah, Sebring is an evil mistress. That's tough. I would love probably the Nürburgring.
Yeah.
You know, I got to drive around there.
Win-win for me, because that's what I guessed.
Yeah, I would absolutely go over there. Very few drivers have enough laps on that track to
yeah.
truly memorize it.
Yeah.
And so I think that would be my pick, because it would be forever before I hit the plateau
yeah.
of not getting any better.
Yeah.
And I think the GT3 would be a perfect car there.
Yeah. I mean,
otherwise, like tomorrow, we are going to a rinky-dink little dirt track, and I'm excited, right?
Yeah.
I'm excited for the new
it
challenge
really
and the new track.
But I know why you're excited, because you're going to go there and hopefully race the grocery getter class.
Yeah.
And you want to win, so then you can say you won on the same track that Kyle Larson won on.
Yeah, I think I've probably won on a few of the same tracks
yeah.
Kyle Larson has. It's hard to find a track Kyle Larson
hasn't
won on,
yeah.
so... That is, it's amazing. You know, when you meet somebody that doesn't know anything about racing, they ask all the low-hanging fruit questions,
yeah.
like, do you drive in any NASCAR tracks?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
How fast do you go? And, you know, it's like, well, the cars don't always, it's not always top speed, you know, because you have to corner. And, you know, there have been times where guys have said, you only go 50, 60 miles. And I'm like, yeah, you want to try it? You know, and they'll say, well, I drive faster than the high. I'm like, yeah, so do I. But,
yeah,
it's racing's an amazing sport. The discipline, the planning, the work ethic,
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So, since you come from a hotbed of racing, Wisconsin's a big state. Do you or do you not get all that? Or are you going to go to NASCAR? Or probably now it's like, well, Drive to Survive. Are you going to be a Formula One driver? Or do most of the people there know?
I think most of the people there know that you
yeah.
are who you are.
Yeah.
You're not going any farther than where you are, maybe a couple levels, and you'll
yeah.
slowly evolve or slowly move up classes
yeah.
as the years go on. I always wanted to be a NASCAR driver. I thought that was a great career choice when
yeah.
I was a kid. And I was younger than 20 when I realized, okay, this probably isn't going to happen for me. So we're just going to race as much as we can.
Yeah.
But, you know, the few years I did in World Challenge, I loved it. I loved the experience.
Yeah.
But that's when the reality hit me that most pro racing is, first and foremost, the ability to write a check.
Yeah.
If I wanted to fund a team and go road racing right now and just go win a bunch of amateur events,
yeah.
I know the four drivers I'm calling to go with me who
yeah.
We would spank the field.
Yeah.
You know, I know the talent out there that just doesn't have
yeah.
the money
yeah.
to outright buy their way in anymore.
Yeah.
So, and of course they say you work hard enough, you get seen. But there's so much more to
yeah.
it. There's a lot more to it. And I've had people come to me and I've had a little bit of help here and there with partners and sponsors and so on, but nobody's flat out given me a budget that
yeah.
could allow me to do it. Every little bit helps, you
yeah.
know. The last few years with you know, Hawk Performance and Frozen Rotors and Mobile One and now Track Day Tire giving me tires. That's amazing. That's a
yeah.
godsend. And I couldn't be more grateful. But nobody has written a check that's going to make
yeah.
my racing profitable
yeah.
ever. So
yeah. You don't have 17 Chevy dealerships yet.
No, not yet.
So
we got a couple of fireplace dealerships. We'll work
yeah,
on that
they'll
first.
They'll get there, yeah.
yeah.
yeah. That's what they say. The best way to become a professional race car driver is get rich.
Yep. Yep. Might have made $1 million, start with five.
Not five, yeah.
So.
All right. I don't know what else you're going to do except go racing again tomorrow.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks for taking along.
Yeah. Talent by association. My
yes,
new
sir.
Motto.
Love it.
Cool.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Stock car boy, he eat too much to believe. You know he always got an extra pack of cigarettes rolled up in his t-shirt sleeve. He got a tattoo on his arm, I say baby. He got another one that just say hey. Whatever Sunday afternoon, he is a dirt track demon in a 57 Chevrolet. Oh, Rapid Roy, that stock car boy, he the best driver in the land. He say that he learned to race a stock car by running shine out of demolition derby and the figure eight. It's easy money on the bank compared to running from the man in Oklahoma City with a 500-gallon tank. Oh, Rapid Roy, that stock car boy, he eat too much to believe. You know he always got an extra pack of cigarettes rolled up in his t-shirt sleeve. He got a tattoo on his arm, I say baby. He got another one that just say hey. And Sunday afternoon he is a dirt track demon in a 57 Chevrolet. Hey, Roy's so cool at racing fool, he don't know what fear's about. He do 130 miles an hour, smiling at the camera with a toothpick in his mouth. He got a girl back home named Dixie Dawn, but he got honeys all along the way. And you ought to hear him screaming for the dirt track. Yourself and
t-shirt sleeve. He got a tattoo on his arm. I said, baby,